When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening. Post 4th of July pod. We have a good one for you. I didn't really get into a lot of the NFL lawsuit with Sunday Ticket, the antitrust lawsuit that they lost on the pod in recent weeks because we had so many guests, which I'll get into. So I have Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal on this episode to break down the entire thing, how much money we will get as Sunday Ticket subscribers, when we can get our money, what will happen with an appeal, what does it mean for the way the NFL broadcasts games? Could they sell single season, single team packages, single game packages? So this is all about the NFL with that lawsuit, that antitrust lawsuit that they lost, where it stands, how it affects us. So that's we cover that with Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal. And then following him, Sal Licata joins me as he does every week for our Train of Thoughts segment. If you missed it last week over the 4th of July holiday, we had a great episode of the SI Media podcast with Jason McCourty, who gave us the full details on him not staying with Good Morning Football as the show moves in a few weeks here from New York to LA. Jason takes us through his decision, what's going on with the show, everything about Good Morning Football. So check that out from last week if you missed it with Jason McCourty. Pablo Torre was on the podcast 2 weeks ago. Derek Jeter, Tom Brady, recent guests as well. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, check them out, and subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. And if you can, leave a review on Apple. All right, Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal on the NFL losing a massive, massive lawsuit and Sunday Ticket subscribers expecting thousands of dollars, followed by Sal Licata and Traina Thoughts. All right here, right now. On SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, he is a reporter and writer for Sports Business Journal. I haven't dug into the NFL Sunday Ticket antitrust lawsuit too much on the podcast, and I wanted to do that post 4th of July here. So we've got Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal. Ben, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Love the show.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And you've done an excellent job giving us some information on this NFL Sunday Ticket antitrust lawsuit. I'm going to start at the end, basically, because I know what everyone listening wants to know the most. So we'll go backwards. When are we going to get money and how much? What's the timeline?
Let me start with the how much first.
Right.
If you were a subscriber to Sunday Ticket for the entire 12 years at issue, which was 2011 to 2022, according to the jury's verdict, you were overcharged illegally by $191 per year. Multiply that by 12, get to $2,300 roughly, and then antitrust law can triple that. This was a class action against your car manufacturer, and you get $6 because the windshield was busted. This is potentially real money for subscribers. The bad news for fans who are wondering about this is that I talked with a lawyer who's got some appellate experience, and realistically, best case scenario, this case won't be totally settled in the courts till probably 2 years from now, middle of 2026. And the process of actually determining who gets what and cutting checks probably takes us into the off season after the Super Bowl in the first or second quarter of 2027. That's best case scenario. More likely, we're talking 2028, 2029, or never, actually, which getting into the NFL's belief that it can win this case on appeal.
Yeah. I'm strictly talking if the case holds up, NFL doesn't win on appeal. So not until like 2028-ish, it looks like. What are the from what you've heard, what are the chances the NFL can win on appeal? Decent, well, not decent.
The NFL believes that they will win this case ultimately. Of course, they thought they would get off scot-free in the St. Louis lawsuit over the Rams relocation, and they've proven to be wrong on some legal strategy. So, you know, that's only worth what you think it's worth. I think that, you know, if the case as it stands today were in front of the Supreme Court right now, I'd say DraftKings would give the NFL minus 250, minus 300. I think there's every reason to believe that this current Supreme Court, given their pro-business conservative leanings, would find a way to get the NFL out of the jackpot on this one. Having said that,
if the players start kneeling again, then maybe the Supreme Court will go the other way.
Well, and you know, I hadn't thought about that exact one, but that's why I heavily caveat that, because that's if the case were in front of the Supreme Court as it stands today. The appeals process, you know, maybe the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals throws out some part of the case. So what the Supreme Court ultimately gets is a more narrow issue. The Supreme Court only takes 1% of all cases that gets appealed to it. It's entirely possible Supreme Court would say, yeah, we'd take your side, but we don't think this is important enough to actually dig into. And they would allow a Ninth Circuit Appeals Court decision to stand as final. So I don't know. It's almost like, you know, one of those situations back where there's this huge imbalance between the NFC and the AFC. And like, if you're an NFC team, like if we can just get to the Super Bowl, we're going to win. But we got to play the 95 Cowboys first. So, you know, the NFL is hopeful, but there's a lot of ways that could still go bad for them on appeal, for sure.
I should have given listeners just a quick background, just if anyone who doesn't have Sunday Ticket is listening and may not know. Well, so basically, there was an antitrust lawsuit filed against the NFL by some DirecTV Sunday Ticket consumers. And the verdict was that the NFL monopoly overcharged, didn't handle the distribution of games correctly. So 2.4 million DirecTV Sunday Ticket subscribers, plus another 50,000 for businesses, from 2011, 2022, they won the case. And that's why there's some money that's supposedly coming their way. How shocked was the NFL that they lost this case with the jury?
I don't think they were, actually. I think the NFL knew that when you take a case like this to a jury, it's at best 50-50. You know, I mean, the arguments the NFL are making here are highly legal in nature. It's deep into business and legal principles that a layperson wouldn't necessarily appreciate. From the perspective of a juror who has no special training in media strategy or the law, they see a big corporation like NFL and Sunday and DirecTV and CBS and Fox. They probably know, at least anecdotally in their life, that this is a very expensive product, and they hear a case to be made in court that, yeah, ESPN said they could do it for $70 a month, but DirecTV was charging you $350 a month or whatever it was. The facts were just not great from a jury perspective. So I think that really gets into the question of why they didn't settle. I think they didn't settle because they really believe that this will get thrown out on appeal, and that taking that upfront hit with the jury verdict is just the cost of doing business. Now, I will say that I think the trial went as well as the NFL could have hoped for. I think you saw there were some reports about the judge complaining about the plaintiff's case, that he thought it was convoluted and not well presented. I think the NFL went into the jury deliberations thinking they had a better shot than maybe they did when the case started. But still, like I said, the facts were just tough for them.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question about how shocked was the NFL that they lost, because I knew the judge at one point said, like, the case is flimsy, he was ready to throw it out or something like that, and then here they are, and the NFL loses.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just an illustration of how juries and judges can see things very differently, and antitrust is an area of the law that's particularly prone to that, because there's no bright line definition of illegal conspiracies to restrain trade. It's these complicated questions the jury has to ask about what is too far, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I was a Sunday Ticket subscriber in that window, so I would love a check, whatever it's for, 7,000, 3,000, whatever it is. But I still, to this date, here we are almost 2 weeks, I guess, since the verdict, I don't understand what the NFL did wrong. I mean, you have a business, you have a product, you're allowed to sell that product for what the market dictates. So I don't even know. Like, listen, God bless you for filing the lawsuit if I get a check out of it, but I don't understand what the NFL did wrong here.
Well, I think that was the widely held perception of everyone who covers sports and business, that what are you talking about? They put all the 32 teams' media rights together and then sold them through an exclusive contract. That's how we've been doing business for decades. That, to be slightly reductive, is the entire reason the league exists, other than to set rules and hire officials. That's what they do. They put all the teams together and sell it out to one company. But, you know, there are precedents at the Supreme Court that says these are 32 separate businesses, and that by the letter of antitrust law, the Cowboys and the Bengals should be out there competing for media rights, not collaborating to sell media rights together. Now, in 1961, Congress passed a law specifically allowing that, but it only deals with broadcast. That's why the plaintiffs can't go after their deals with CBS and Fox and NBC. And that's why this is so interesting, is that this is now saying, well, that only applies to technology that existed in 1961. Streaming and cable both look to be ripe for similar arguments elsewhere, whenever you have all the teams coming together and selling it to a single company.
All right, so if the NFL, forget the monetary aspect of it, if the NFL lost the appeal, does this lead to changes for Sunday Ticket or how games are distributed? Or because now they're not on DirecTV, now it's YouTube. And those, I mean, I talked about this, I think, last week. I'm not a YouTube TV subscriber. I still have cable, so I get charged more. It's up to $450 now for Sunday. Now is when they should be suing. I mean, back when it was DirecTV, I think it was like $300. But what is it? I guess, well, let me start with this. Reverse course. If the NFL won an appeal, I would assume then that means nothing changes. They could do whatever they want with how they distribute games.
Is that correct?
So now if they lose the appeal, in addition to the money, does this change how they distribute games?
I think it likely does. Because this court case specifically only deals with the prior DirecTV contract that isn't enforced, they wouldn't necessarily have to. But Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk has been smart in making this point that if you lost a case about the facts of the DirecTV deal, you could reasonably assume you might also lose a case about the YouTube deal. So the NFL then would be more proactive as a matter, not so much of legal decision-making, but a business strategy that says we need to lower our exposure on that front. And maybe then, you know, they tear up that contract and, you know, at the minimum, you could start doing team by team deals like you've always wanted. Just give me my Bengals out of market package. Or it could turn into a thing where Sunday Ticket is available through NFL's own Game Pass product, in addition to Sunday Ticket, multiple distribution zones. Either of those steps, creating skinny bundles within Sunday Ticket or doing business with companies in addition to YouTube, would probably lower their exposure dramatically.
All right, so take out the lawsuit aspect of it. In this day and age where there are so many avenues for content, the NFL, again, one outlet for Sunday Ticket, YouTube, that's it, can't get it anywhere else. They seem very opposed to ever doing single team packages, single game packages. In this day and age where distribution is so different, is that an archaic mindset or is it still good business for them to do things that way?
Well, I mean, now we're getting into, you know, matters of opinion. I think that, you know, very firmly most people in sports media strategy believe that exclusivity and bundling leads to the highest value, that, you know, if you have every NFL game, that is more than just the sum total of each individual game times however many games you're buying, that there's some sort of, you know, larger value in addition to just getting teams, that it's the whole league, you know. But I think that's fair to ask if that's still the case in this modern era of distribution. I mean, you know, you've talked so much about how baseball is frustrating, about how many different distribution outlets there are and how hard it is as a fan. So, you know, there is some reconsidering of that. But, you know, when Amazon gets those Yankees games, they're not sharing it with five other outlets. The value is driven mostly when you are the one place you can go to see the games. I don't think that's going away. I think there's room to reconsider that. But, you know, YouTube is not going to pay the NFL as much money if they have to share, if you can get Sunday Ticket from somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get, listen, if I'm the NFL, if I'm YouTube, I understand why Sunday Ticket would be exclusive to YouTube. I get that. I guess I'm more talking about, and it is amazing how many fans, all they want is to be able to buy their own team's package. And the NFL, I mean, if you listen to the NFL, that sounds like something they just never, ever want to happen. And I guess, listen, if they're charging me $450 for Sunday Ticket, and let's say you're in New York and you're a Packers fan and they want to charge you, I don't know, $300 for the Packers games, it seems like the NFL can still make enough money here.
Well, I think you make a reasonably good point about that, because the delta, the gap between what I'd pay for the whole league and what I'd pay for my favorite team is not that broad.
Right.
But I think, and this is a part the NFL didn't get very far with the jury, but may get further with appeals court judges, is that the Sunday Ticket pricing is part of a whole system that's interlocking. And if you start making Sunday Ticket too user-friendly, you've got the legs out from underneath CBS and Fox. And that's where we get into this, like, okay, you're artificially keeping Sunday Ticket exclusive and hard to buy and a little unwieldy, so you're driving people back to CBS and Fox. If Sunday Ticket becomes clearly the best place for me to watch this one team, they're going to see viewership go down at CBS and Fox, which lowers the value of their contracts with CBS and Fox. So it's all a balancing act and how this gets put together. And the NFL's argument was, the jury didn't take it very seriously, but the NFL's argument, to be slightly glib, is if you take away exclusivity from Sunday Ticket, we start to see degradation in our broadcast numbers, and then the whole value of the total media rights pie goes down. Salary cap goes down or doesn't grow as much, and competitive balance is hurt, and the sport you know and love isn't as good as it used to be.
You know, the ironic thing about that is the NFL is basically the only thing keeping broadcast alive. Hey, well, if CBS and Fox and NBC don't have the NFL, who knows what their numbers look like?
Oh, God. I mean, the bottom's falling out of some of those businesses, even with the NFL.
Right.
At least they've got a great Sunday afternoon in the fall. But, you know, some of the evidence in the trial got into that, how CBS and Fox executives were like, OK, we want to re-up for another 10 years, but you can't make Sunday Ticket better. You know, that was the gist of their argument, because every person that goes to Sunday Ticket is one less person watching CBS.
Right. Right.
Or Jets game or whatever.
I feel like Sunday Ticket was so much better on YouTube also than DirecTV, which is interesting that they didn't want it to be better, but I feel like it is better.
That's a good point. And one of the things that really undermined the NFL's case in the trial is that they say exclusive contracts allow for the highest amount of money to come into the system, and it encourages our broadcast partners to innovate, to make a great game. If Sunday Ticket's available on six different platforms, why is it in DirecTV's interest to improve the quality of the Sunday Ticket experience? Because they're just going to compete on price rather than try to make it the best product they can. But then they got Roger Goodell to admit on stand that in the last 10 years DirecTV had it, they really didn't make the product any better. So, which of course, anyone who ever had Sunday Ticket would tell you, it felt like you were stuck in 2003 era technology. And finally getting to YouTube's allowing to do all the things you can do with streaming and digital distribution. But the idea that exclusive rights to DirecTV made it a better product was a tough sell for the last 10 years of that contract.
Right. So the NFL and the owners didn't want the Sunday Ticket product to be better, but then they went to YouTube where it is better. So that's interesting.
Well, I think it was a matter of, right, I know that sounds strange, but I think what they would say is time elapsed. That in 2018, they had a chance to get out of the DirecTV contract, but they didn't think the internet could handle it, basically. Now it can. Amazon has proved that 20 million people can watch Amazon on Thursday nights, whether they enjoy that experience or not. And it's fine, you know, so they moved it over to YouTube, and that's where they unlock all this improvement in the experience.
Were there any other notable revelations from that trial? I mean, I ended up writing a column about it where Goodell basically took a dump on his own network and said that they ended up moving Thursday Night Football off of NFL Network because the quality was not good, I'd love to be able to get into NFL media stuff when we wrap this up, just because of what's with all the layoffs and stuff there. But So I found that interesting. Were there any other revelations from testimony that you think listeners might be interested in that stuck out to you as an NFL fan, basically?
Yeah. You know, I think between me and the AP and a few of the other people that were covering this trial, we pretty much hit the real big headlines. I would say that with the only exception is not so much a new set of facts that didn't get it already a lot of attention, but to synthesize what you just said about his comments about the NFL Network not being good enough, I think that explains a lot of the NFL media stuff going on right now. There's a sense that the NFL Network, just on a minute-to-minute basis, if you turn it on at any time during the day, is not at a production value that is commensurate with the NFL brand. And that's one of the reasons they're trying to think more dramatically about what are we going to do with this? You know, it's a great place to put the odd Saturday afternoon game in December, but this is a mediocre sports cable channel right now. We're the NFL. We don't do anything that's mediocre. So we're going to put stuff into Skydance and, like, you know, the quarterback series and all that, and be less concerned about a 24/7 cable channel.
Well, I don't know how you can be anything but mediocre when you're basically an infomercial for the league. I mean, if some, you know, there's not going to be a show where they're going to go rip Jerry Jones. There's not going to be a show where they're going to rip Antonio Brown for being a clown. Like, it's an infomercial. The whole network is set up to promote the league. So I don't know how you end up not being mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely that, and you and I know that as arm's-length journalists. I think the NFL would say, even within the confines of being the in-house media organ, it just isn't innovating. At any given moment, you turn on NFL Network, and it's a broadcast major anchoring the studio show, some ex-player or coach doing an analysis, and a whip around a reporter standing in front of guys doing drills at an OTA. And it's so boring and predictable, and the same thing we've been – meanwhile – the quarterback series on Netflix is an example of the NFL doing something that's really cutting edge and different. And I think the NFL headquarters and the owners are like, why are we putting money into this average cable property when we have the ability to do great stuff just in a different format?
So all right, so we'll go there because so something came out, I believe it was on Tuesday, that the national revenue for the league in 2023 was $13 billion. Now, I think what the typical average viewer needs to understand is, and I didn't understand this at first, and then, so the NFL Network is considered a totally separate thing from the NFL. So while the NFL revenue is $13 billion, if you go into the NFL media books, they're losing money or whatever, sure. You know.
Absolutely.
So that's why we've seen they're moving Good Morning Football from New York to LA to save money. And I would make the argument, going back to your last point, yes, there's only so much you can do on the NFL Network in terms of quality. To me, that was as good as you could have had for the NFL Network in terms of a show, and they're messing with it, which is interesting. Came out over the 4th of July holiday weekend. Hugely popular and successful podcast around the NFL. Canceled. Two of the guys gone. We've seen layoffs with talent over the past several months. Is it the people in charge can't get it right? Is it they don't know what to do with the net? Why is I hate to use the word failure, but it's all setting up basically off of what you described as well. Why is it such a failure? What is the issue?
Well, I've got some thoughts on that. But first, I should say, I don't know. I do think that there is something of a mystery here about what the NFL is really thinking about NFL media. And the reason I say that is because this idea that the NFL media is losing money, I don't know this for sure, but I think it's sort of always been true that this was a bit of a lost leader, that the principle of the NFL Network was not necessarily to spin off hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, but to promote the league, to be a place on TV that was all NFL all the time. And I thought for a long time they were happy to spend money on that. Now that's being framed as losses, and something's changed in their willingness to accept those losses. I don't think that's fully been explained by my reporting or anybody else's.
And that's what's interesting. It seems like now they've had enough of the losses, and here we are where they just made $13 billion. You would think the losses wouldn't hit you. You know, just using Good Morning Football as an example. Okay, you just made $13 billion. I understand the owners are not the same as NFL Network, but why doesn't each owner chip in whatever, $500,000, and then they can keep Good Morning Football in New York? It doesn't. It just something. Nothing adds up. That's what I'm, It all seems like it's something doesn't add up with all of it.
Yeah, I asked that exact question to somebody, a source of mine who's familiar with how owners think. He says, Ben, as a fan, you say, sure, you should cross subsidize NFL Network with all the other money you're making in the league. A billionaire, say it's Josh Harris or David Tepper, who are relatively new to the league. And they say, they come in and they see a spreadsheet of how everything's doing. And they see bright green, big returns in six different buckets of everything the NFL does. We print money. We almost can't lose money. There's this one thing, the NFL Network, that's in the red. And the perspective of a billionaire is, why the hell isn't that in the green? What do we have to do to get that in the green? This is dragging us down. We could be even better. And that perspective is starting to take over in the NFL, I'm hearing. And then there's this whole other thing about the extremely expensive NFL Network studios they built out in LA adjacent to the SoFi Stadium. And there's some muttering about why that building is so opulent. I mean, I even hear from NFL employees that NFL employees who work in LA get free lunches and like beautiful work environments. And they're, you know, cramped into an old office building in Manhattan, and things are much nicer. And there's a certain amount of resentment about how nice things are out in the media side of things. Right. Like, let's just pull this back, especially considering that you're not actually making money for us.
So. Yeah. That's wild. And then the Around the NFL podcast, do you know what the reason was for that getting canceled?
No, I don't. And like all these comments I'm making about, you know, whether it's losing money or their willingness to lose money on it, you know, all those things hold, but it doesn't explain any given property because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, how expensive is a podcast?
Right.
You know, right. So that's what I mean about how I can help listeners maybe get some sense of the broader thinking around this, but the details still don't totally make sense.
Right. It's also, I mean, it is so hard in this day and age to have a successful podcast. And here you have one that is more than successful. And then, like you just said perfectly, does not cost a ton of money to produce, you know, to run a podcast. It just seems like someone there is out of touch. That's what it feels like. But,
well, I think there's a certain amount of not unearned hubris too, that why spend $1 million on a world-class podcast when we can spend $400,000 on a mediocre podcast that people will still listen to because it's got the NFL shield on it.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, that bums me out as a fan, but as a business person, that's a decent argument. You know?
Speaking of business, there were rumblings, you know, percolating about, I don't even remember if it was ESPN's going to buy NFL Media or NFL Media is going to buy ESPN or what, is something still in the works? What was it supposed to be? What could it be? Is there going to be an ESPN NFL partnership?
That's been a maddening story to write. I think it was over the Christmas holidays or maybe first few days of the year, Andrew Marchand at the Post said that it was imminent, close enough to the finish line. They were getting the players union involved to talk about how the revenue of a deal would be shared. And there's a very complicated set of implications there. I was told that was maybe slightly overstating the case at that time, but, you know, directionally accurate. We're 6 months later and people tell me the deal is really not any closer to getting done. I think it makes a lot of sense at a strategic level to maybe make the NFL Network something like the SEC Network had been, sort of a sub-brand of ESPN. I think given how challenging the media, the TV media business is, and that ESPN and NFL Network are still, for the moment, first and foremost, cable stations in a declining environment, I think makes that deal really tough to put together. I think that eventually it'll happen, but, you know, very little progress on that front.
That's interesting. And because ESPN, I mean, they're gearing up for direct to consumer. You know, they have a lot going on. So I could see that.
Right. By the time they go direct to consumer, the calculus here could change a lot. So, yeah. I mean, definitely not killing this, but just when every quarter we see a new report saying 5 million more people cut the cord, I just think it's really tough to put a deal together in there. You know, just the money keeps getting smaller and smaller. And what maybe looked good for an equity swap 18 months ago makes less sense now. And it's just sort of not a real friendly environment.
Yeah, that's true. And I should have followed up on this when we talk about CBS and Fox and broadcast. You know, I was sort of, and I guess that maybe I was naive and I'm old, and I sort of believed when Roger Goodell would say it sometimes, and people in the business would say it, and I sort of believe, like, I always felt like I would be completely shocked if we had a situation where Sunday at 1, the NFL wasn't on CBS or Fox or broadcast channel. And I have to say, the last couple of years, I think I'd be more surprised now if they stayed on broadcast. We've seen it with they go to Netflix for Christmas, their YouTube for Sunday Ticket, Amazon has Thursday night. The streaming services have all the money. People are cutting cable at a rate that's unbelievable. Can you see a situation where, and there's all this talk too, maybe you could weigh in on this, of the TV contracts, there's an opt-out, and the NFL may opt out because of what's going on with the NBA. Am I too dire there? Do you think they'll still have the broadcast presence no matter what? Or do you think time's running out on that?
I think they will. I still feel like they believe that it's a long time until it's not true that the best way to reach the most people is through free over-the-air broadcast. The NFL has believed that for a long, long time. And I think, if anything, that's more true today than it was 10 or 15 years ago in the heyday of cable, or 20 years ago, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, broadcast has had a certain rejuvenation, not in football, but, you know, I think it's, you know, the Phoenix Suns and other basketball, you know, they're putting local games back on broadcast rather than cable, because cable is so unpopular. So, you know, I think they'll continue to slice and dice and put more Christmas games or more one-off games on streaming, because that's, you know, an easy way to make another $50 million that wasn't in the pile. But I think you can count on NFL being on broadcast for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Again, you're getting all this money from Netflix for the Christmas games. Go keep Good Morning Football in New York. It makes no sense. It just does not add up in any way, shape, or form. It's just to put a bow on the Sunday Ticket. It is amazing that they just got taken to court for the pricing and the gouging, and like I said, $450 for Sunday Ticket this year. And my guess is they're not going to lose many people even at that price. It is, despite all of this, I mean, I feel like we've been very negative just because but the NFL still runs this country. I mean, it's crazy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right that not a lot of reason to believe overall viewership is going to decline. And I think YouTube believes that the subscriber base is going to continue to grow up as they can grow as they continue to improve the product. And people love football, and the NFL deals from a position of strength here at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you giving us some insight. I've been wanting to cover this for a few weeks, and I actually think it's better I did it now than when it first happened, because we've seen more come out. And I mean, it is pretty wild that a jury, you know, jury inflicted $5 billion in damages to the NFL. And but like Ben said at the top, we got a couple of more years here to go before anything is settled, right?
Right. And just, you know, I try not to get too much into this, but to give you a flavor of where the appeals is going, the NFL filed its motions sort of officially responding to the verdicts for the first time and laying the groundwork for all the things they're going to complain about, both to the judge and to the appeals courts. And they were very harsh about the jury. They thought the jury just fundamentally misunderstood some of the math and some of the law and some of the technical aspects of how the product actually works. and said that they basically just made up numbers. And that $191 thing I gave you was, I mentioned earlier, was like pulled out of thin air. And that's extraordinary. You know, I mean, everyone with a law degree in this country will tell you a jury verdict is sacrosanct. You know, I mean, that it's almost a religious notion that juries don't get things wrong. And if they did, you've got to prove it. Well, the NFL's ready to fight this.
That's a fascinating defense. The jury didn't understand. I mean, you have games, you put them on DirecTV and you charged a big price and you couldn't get the games unless you had DirecTV. It doesn't seem like it's that hard to understand.
Well, that $191 they came up with was the difference between the list price and what people actually paid. And the NFL said that's a discount. You know, you can't, because the damage should be the difference between what I paid and what I would have paid had they not committed the antitrust violation. The NFL said the number they came up with to estimate that difference has no basis in logic, much less the law. So anyway, that's of course the NFL is going to say that to an extent.
Right.
The vehemence with which they said the jury just completely misunderstood the situation was pretty extraordinary.
All right. So this will keep, that's what I also wanted to sort of get through to people, is like, this is not like, I, you know, you hear, okay, jury reached a verdict and the NFL was found, you know, $5 billion in debt. It's not over. It's not even close to being over.
Not even close to being over.
Yeah. All right. Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal. Appreciate the information. And I'm sure we'll have you on again when this takes more twists and turns. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Love to join you again. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right. Take care. All right. Joining me now, as he does every week, for our Train of Thought segment from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Acata. Sal, how's it going?
Great. I feel like, I was thinking about this today, I feel like it's been a lot longer than it really has. It's only been a week and a day, I think, right?
Well, we taped on Monday of the 4th of July week.
So that's why. I was like, then we taped it Tuesday. Yes, now that makes sense.
We taped on Monday. We put the pod out on Wednesday. Thursday was the 4th. So now we're back to our Wednesday taping. So that's why you missed.
That's why. Okay.
Yeah. That's why you missed me.
I did. My body clock was off. I was like, I haven't talked to Jimmy in a while, it feels like. All right.
I know. How was your 4th of July?
It was actually very nice. It was nice to be off for 4 days. We had a couple people over at different points, but it was nice and relaxing for the most part. It was great being home. I enjoyed it. Did you do anything? Fireworks were annoying, but outside of that, it was all right.
So you were hosting. You had people over.
Not on the 4th. On the 4th, we didn't really do anything. Oh, no. I'm sorry. On the 4th, we had my wife's family over, but a small.
That doesn't count. Yeah, I thought you had friends.
No. The 5th, then we had my family, but it was more people. And then the 6th, just nothing, which is great.
Oh, no. 7th. Family doesn't count. Because family, you can say, oh, go, you know, go do what you want. Go make your own food or whatever. Friends, you have to entertain. I thought.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The 7th, you'll like this, was we got invited to the neighbor's house to go spend time with the neighbors and meet the neighbors.
Have you met did you meet the neighbor before this?
Nah, no, this was the first time.
So they invited you without even knowing you, like a blind invite.
Yeah, I think they knew who I was.
Okay, so I got it. So they're like, oh, big shot, Sal Acata from WFAN moved in next door.
Yeah, I think that might have been the case. Now, they did send, you know, when we moved in, they sent something to the house. It was very nice. And the wife was talking to my wife, and they sent something up. But
okay, so so that makes sense.
But yeah, when I got there, we never met before, but he knew, you know.
So you were you peppered with questions about the fan?
Not a ton. No, not a ton. But there was talking about quite.
I was going to say, in that scenario, when someone meets you, they realize who you are, do you get more, do they want to talk to you more about the fan or sports?
Sports, I think. Okay. I do think it depends on the person. Like I always used to say, I was a walking complaint box. Oh, right. You work at the fan? Tell Mike he's nasty to callers, or tell I miss this. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. Right, now, right. I think that people feel like the conversation was, they invited us over at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock just happened to be the 8th inning of the Mets game that they were about to implode. And he's like, oh, I'm surprised you got here because the Mets game. I was like, well, I don't want to be rude. You invited me over at 4. I can go back and watch. You think I want to be here? No, I'd rather be watching the game. But I'm here, so let's just get to it.
You think I was it? So I'm gathering this is a situation where your wife said you're going.
100%. Yes.
I know you
and
so
for
well.
Her, I went. It wasn't bad. They're nice people.
Right.
It's not them. It's
right.
me.
Right. Like yeah, you don't want to be bought. You have very limited. Listen, all kidding aside, I get it. Like, well, you work two jobs. Like you're on the air at 10 a.m. Then you're on the air at 6 p.m. So you are not home often. So when you are home, you want to have Sal time. I get it totally.
Yeah. And we just talked about this too. Like we do in life a lot of times things that we really don't want to do when time is the most valuable thing. And I know it's out of respect sometimes for family or friends, but the reality is we do a lot of things we don't want to be doing with our valuable time. And I'm too old to really give a shit about that at this point. Like they're very nice people. I'm sure we'll see them again. But like I'm at a point where, yeah, those 2 hours, I would have rather probably have been home doing whatever the fuck it is that I want to be doing as opposed right. to go. I get that you have to do it. Right. I understand that. But, you know.
I get it. I totally get it. So you were busy. You had family over 2 days and then you go to the neighbors.
How'd the fireworks go down with you?
It wasn't. So we go to a beach every year on the 4th and they do fire. So by the time I get home, it's late and so it wasn't too bad. The fireworks were not that bad this year.
Okay. I'm
trying to think. But we went to a beach on the 4th, which was very nice with my friends, very relaxing. And then I took a couple of days off this week, and it was basically the pool both days. So
nice. Okay.
Yeah. And that's it. The bad thing about when I get time off is I usually don't pay attention to sports at all, except for the Yankees, because I'm watching the Yankees. So I miss a lot of the stuff, and then I got to come back and do this and I'm out of the loop. I kind of wish I didn't know about the Yankees, but unfortunately that's the one thing I follow and they're a shit show.
They've been dreadful. Really, what else is there? Like, have you been watching the Hard Knocks show?
No.
So what else is there that you miss?
No, just like news and if, you know,
okay.
News items basically.
I feel like there's nothing going, like I could not care less about the USA basketball team. Just no. Don't care about it. I'm enjoying the Hard Knocks stuff with the Giants. That's been fine. But outside of that, it's basically baseball. And even that is the All-Star game stuff coming up. The worst. We are entering now the worst week in the sports calendar next week.
Without a doubt. Maybe, I don't know. Like, my thing with Hard Knocks is I haven't liked it for a while. And then when you know that the team can edit or has final approval,
right.
It takes some of the fun out of it. I mean, it's the same thing they just launched the wide receiver show on Netflix. They had the quarterback show. It's done by Peyton Manning's company. You think they're going to make any of the players look bad? No, it's going to be a puff piece. So it's, I'd rather go watch, you know, a show maybe than get into those things.
Understood. I will say the difference. And I think we talked about this weeks ago with the wide receiver stuff. Like, I don't care about the reality shows behind the scenes of sports. I'd rather watch the housewives in reality shows. And I want to watch the sports play the game. So a show like Receiver does nothing for me. I didn't watch quarterback. But I do think Hard Knocks is a little different because it takes you behind the scenes of the actions that we do care about when, as it pertains to the sports teams.
I would be into all of those shows if they taught me something, if they gave me something I didn't know, if they gave me some insights into players that you don't know. But I feel like with social media, you know all the players, so it's hard to really learn anything.
The thing I found fascinating about Hard Knocks, which maybe you would like they're at the combine and they're interviewing the quarterbacks. And like Dable will just be like, okay, well, tell me your favorite play. Now draw it up. And to see these guys, kids in that setting, like draw up the plays or try to answer his questions. To me, that is a different, like I've watched football my whole life. I've never seen that side of it necessarily. So I like that.
So I saw that clip this morning on Twitter because I saw some tweet was like, Drake May responding to Dable will blow your mind away. And I'm watching Dable like just throw out 9 million words in 30 seconds. And I'm like, okay, but your team stunk last year. So like, well, you can have all these fancy words and you won like four games. So what? Right. I don't mean for this to be an attack on Brian Daboll, but there is no group of people who thinks they are more important or smarter than NFL head coaches. I sleep in my office. I get there at 4 a.m. Here's the Tundra 2 wise. Your team stunk. I mean, it's ridiculous. The Yankees were really the only thing I followed, and they're a problem. That's all I got to say.
Well, what would you do, though? Because I know you want a Cashman gone. You probably want Boone gone. Like, can they be fixed?
So I hate even getting into this because it's layered and people are just dumb. Because everyone wants Aaron Boone fired. I couldn't believe the other day on my Twitter, I said the dopiest people are the ones who think if they fire Aaron Boone, anything's going to be different. The vibe I get is every Yankee fan wants Aaron Boone fired. Okay. Now, I think it's useless, but if you want to fire him, fire him. I don't care because I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think it's a move to make him. The problem is the philosophy of the organization. And to me, that's Cashman. What has to change is every year it's the same shit. Old players who can't move, Rizzo, LeMayu, Stanton. Every year there's no youth. There's no one who can steal a base. There's no scrappy players. It's the same thing over and over and over. Brian Cashman. The Yankees have not gone to the World Series since 2009. Fine. I don't give him credit for any World Series other than 2009. Those were Bob Watson and Gene Michaels players. So to me, I don't understand why he's allowed to just keep going, going, and going. I've said this now for like 5 years. You need to change the voice. You need to change the way the organ, everything with the analytics. They get J.D. Davis, who was cut by the A's and is a terrible player, and they batted him cleanup the day they got him. I want to know. Now, I don't think for 1 second that's Aaron Boone's decision. You will never convince me that's Aaron Boone's decision. That's Brian Cashman. The Trent Grisham play should have never. He should have been benched the day after he played. I don't believe that's Aaron Boone's doing that. I think that's Brian Cashman and the computers and the analytics and the spreadsheets telling Aaron Boone what to do. So if you fire Aaron Boone, I don't understand what the difference is. The entire philosophy of the org. Now listen, I'm saying all this as a team. If you would like to win a World Series, I really don't think Hal Steinbrenner wants to win a World Series. They want to make money. If you want to make money, Brian Cashman's great because he'll get you 95 wins every year. He'll get you in the postseason and you can get all your money from your tickets and your concessions and you have no issues. If you want to win a World Series, you have to now change the team. That's the issue.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you, but we've been saying the same thing for years that it's just not changing. So like it gets tired.
He has a job for life.
And why is that the case?
Because they make money. They print money.
But in sports, it doesn't mean that you're bad. In sports, sometimes you need to change just for the sake of changing. So while the Yankees have had success where many would be like, oh, my God, we'd kill to have a record over 500 for 30 straight years. Understand. That's understood. Understand all that. However, sometimes you just need to change. I'm with you. I think firing Boone is just pointless. He's the manager. He's insignificant, especially with the Yankees.
Right.
He gets mad at calling him data applicator, but that's what he is. He's applying the data.
We say they need to change, but if they print money, they don't think they need to change. They don't care about winning the World Series. They want to print money. So they print money. Yeah. Right. And I'll just say two things about Cashman because I've had it with him for 5-6 years. He couldn't get along with Joe Torre. He couldn't get along with Joe Girardi. He couldn't get along with Derek Jeter. And now everyone wants Boone fired. The problem is Cashman. And for all the people who say that he's been a great GM, they're in the playoffs every year, they win 90 games every year. Again, he has a $300 million payroll. Go be the GM of the Marlins or the Rays or the Pirates and get to the playoffs every year and win 90 games. And then I'll be impressed. I didn't read it yet, but when you have a $300 million payroll, you could cover up all your mistakes. And there's been a million mistakes.
How about Carlos Rodon?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, this is great.
So, I don't know. These Yankee fans with Aaron Boone, Aaron Boone, Aaron Boone. Is Aaron Boone... LeMahieu is shot. Rizzo is shot. Rondon's a bust. Torres has never been able to live up to... And Stanton gets hurt every day. That's none of that is Aaron Boone's fault.
And the worst part of it for you, and this just hit me, you don't even get to hear John I know. And Susan exactly. together on the call.
That is the worst part, because I love when they would get pissy when they would lose.
Susan last night, I happened to catch it. It was great. I love her so much. I turn it on first inning because I'm driving home from work, and the Yankees, Rodon's imploding. She's like, well, that didn't take long.
Right. They get so salty. I love it. That would be the one good part about them losing. All right. All the non-New Yorkers are pissed, so let me move on here. Did you see the Joe Burrow? He went on Part of My Take, and he gave a breakdown of what he thinks the NFL schedule could be. Did you see this?
No. What do you mean, like moving forward?
Well, with an 18-game schedule.
Okay.
So he wants – this is what Joe Burrow wants. He wants an 18-game schedule, which I like.
Well, what are we at right now?
17.
Oh, yeah. I got confused. Right. Okay. So we're at 7. I can't even keep up. So we're at 7. 18 weeks, 17 games. Right.
So No. He wants an 18. Right. That's what we have now. He wants 18, right. 18 games.
Okay.
Two bye weeks for each team.
So 20-week schedule.
Right. Then now he's saying one of the bye weeks should be around week 13 for the entire league. And that's when they can have Pro Bowl festivities. I couldn't care less about that. You couldn't pay me to watch any of that. But that's not important.
I don't want a week without football in the middle of the season. So I don't like that idea, right?
Well, you have – see, I saw Big Cat from PMT said what the NFL should do is schedule a late season bye around the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Then you have some big football to hold you over. But the Burrow thing, he also says by adding the second bye week – then you have the Super Bowl fall on the Sunday before President's Day, and then everyone ends up with a holiday the day after the Super Bowl. So I couldn't care less about the Pro Bowl stuff, but that's the way this, that's really how the schedule should be. It should be 18 games, two byes, President's Day weekend is the Super Bowl, and you get 20 weeks of football.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Look, I'm not opposed to that. It'd have to be done right. I don't like the idea of not having a week in the middle of the season. If you want to do it during the college football playoffs or during the holidays, I'm fine with that. They're not
well, he said the bye should be week 13. So the college football playoff is maybe right around maybe week 15. If you have no NFL on a Sunday, and they because now the college football is – what's the playoff? Yeah. Eight teams or whatever it is. You can have games on Saturday and Sunday, and then it's fine.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not a big college football guy. I wouldn't mind a break.
I got to call you out, though. You're being a hypocrite from this standpoint. You flip out when this game's on Christmas. You don't want games on holidays.
Yeah,
so if so they have the bye weekend. Well, I'm saying, what if they have the bye week on like a holiday?
I love it. I love okay. that. Right, well, it could be, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like for me, I would rather them have the bye week on whether it's New Year's Day, certainly Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. Problem is, it's not going to happen. Huh. As a matter of fact, I'll give you Christmas Day. Give me Christmas Eve. So if there's a week, you know, the Christmas Eve.
Well, the whole day, week, it would be a whole bye week. It wouldn't be.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know. I'm sure they could work it out. I guess the biggest part of that for me would be President's Day. I like that idea. But also, don't you think that since we've expanded now the extra game and minimized the preseason, that the first 4 weeks are shitty football anyway?
No, I don't. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, but you're just an animal who loves the games. But if you actually watch ask Ian about this. I'm sure you'll have Ian Eagle on because I did ask him about this. Like the first 4 weeks are essentially they're like the preseason teams trying to find their way, getting their feet under them. I don't – it's still the NFL. It's still games that count, so that is good, but the quality is not good enough for me.
My enjoyment level is 0% less during the first 4 weeks. My enjoyment level is still as high as it is for the whole right. season, so I don't
– I get it, but yeah. The quality of play just to me is not on – like they're going to – so they'd add another game, minimizing the preseason even more, which is an issue for me.
All right. Last thing. I wrote about this right before the 4th of July holiday.
Yeah.
Am I the only person in this country who doesn't, who isn't upset that the Lakers drafted Bronny James and he's going to play with I cannot believe the venom about this.
Yeah, it doesn't register to me. I couldn't give a crap less. My question would be, is he an NBA player? The second part of that would be, did LeBron and the Lakers do his son a favor? Because I think this is, I'm not talking about by just drafting him, period. I'm talking about by putting him in a position to succeed. I don't think this is the best spot for him. Away from his father, out of his father's shadow would have been best. I get if you want to play together. I understand that part of it. But for Bronny's career, I don't think this is best for him.
See, I'm going into it thinking he's not really going to have a big NBA career. This is more of a sentimental thing. LeBron said something about, he gave an interview and he talked about how LeBron did not have a father growing up. So him being able to play with his son and him being a good dad and all that means a lot to him. This is more of a sentimental thing than NBA basketball. So if they want, and LeBron's going to retire in a year or two. So if LeBron wants to spend the last year of his career playing with his son, and his son is like the 12th man off the bench, is this really the venom, the people saying the most horrible things about LeBron and Bronny? Like, is it really that big of, like, is it really, I just don't see the harm.
Well, who's saying this? I'm assuming
a lot of people.
Not
disgrace. They use the draft pick on him. LeBron, this LeBron's ego. The kid doesn't want this. LeBron. First of all, you don't even know who wants it. But, you know, using a draft pick on him as if the 55th pick of the draft is like that big of a deal. I don't know.
Yeah.
LeBron's ego. LeBron, this. LeBron. I mean, the guy wants to play with his son. I don't know. I think it's a cool thing.
I think people just hating on him. I'll tell you this. I'd be more likely to watch a game with LeBron and his son playing in it than I would if it were just LeBron.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. All right. That is it. Are you going to hang out with the neighbor this weekend or lay low?
No. Although, you know, there's got to be a part two because I'm like, this is not going to end like this.
What if the wife invites your wife over?
Yeah, that's fine, but...
No, and then you got to go, the husband.
No. They're, again, nice people. I'm not trying to knock them, but I'm also not trying to become friends with anybody. Like, friends like that. Oh, yeah, why don't you come over tonight? Or, nah, I'm good, thanks.
I have a feeling we're going to tape this next week, so I was going to be, you don't even know what happened.
No,
the wife invited my wife over.
No. Let's come on. I don't even see my actual friends. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, but the neighbors, that's it. You got to make friends with the neighbors. All right, Sal. Take it easy. We'll see you next week. All right, my many, many thanks to Ben Fisher from Sports Business Journal. My thanks to Sal Licata. My thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes of SI Media with Jimmy Traina, make sure you go into the archives and check them out. Jason McCourty, on his departure from Good Morning Football, was on the show last week, right before the 4th of July holidays. So if you missed it, make sure you give it a listen. Pablo Torre 2 weeks ago on his unique podcast. Derek Jeter, Tom Brady, recent guests as well. So check those out. Subscribe, rate, and review. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.